the Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Drill to right field. That ball is hit well. It's to the wall, and it is gone. Jamer Candelario has his first Tigers home run. He showed some pop in the minor leagues, and that's his first big league homer with the Tigers. Jamer gets one back.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports exclusive is driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Rowe does over the middle.
There you go.
Joe McQuinn, right side, to the house. Count it down with me, folks. 10-5, end zone, touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, that is big. How about 2-7, patrolling center field like a safety should.
Get ready. It's now Drive Time.
Barrett gets the snap, hands it to Weber. Weber sweeping left side to the Rutgers 45 to the 40, 35, 30, down the sideline. Weber to the 20, to the 10, to the 5, and into the end zone goes Mike Weber with a 46-yard touchdown run to increase Ohio State's lead by 6 more.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Curry blocked the shot, and Gretzky in 3-0. Los Angeles. Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it. DeMarco, 15 feet, 4 inches, center of cup, President's Cup to the United States.
Restaurant, little back-to-back doubleheader as always on Wednesday night. Drive Time is always driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik, where the auto show specials continue. Visit MonroeSuperstore.com. One of my favorites, 2018 Dodge Durango, four-wheel drive, $268 a month. That is a 36-a-month lease. 5:15 tonight, John Wagner will join us. John, of course, with the Toledo Blade, covers the Bowling Green Falcons, who last night, down big in that basketball game. They come from behind and win. Rockets win again last night over at Savage Hall over the Ohio Bobcats. Walleye on the road, they lost 3-1 to Brampton. Walleye had won 8 straight. Brampton had lost 9 straight, but Brampton wins at 3-1. Walleye on the road again Saturday night against Kalamazoo. If you're up this morning to watch the hockey game, United States hockey team that was together for just 5 days, with players mostly coming from the KHL, the American Hockey League, and even Brian Gianto was semi-retired, they lose a 3-2 game to Slovenia in the preliminaries, of course, over in Pyeongchang in the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. The United States, very, very good for about 40 minutes, ran out of gas in the third, into former Red Wing. Jan Mrzak scores the game winner in overtime. The United States, really, I don't think it was the place where they just were playing that bad, but Slovenia really just took over the game and made some tremendous plays down the stretch. Long way to go in this tournament. We'll get some expert advice on this coming up at 6:35 tonight. Brian Smolinski, who has played in a number of championship tournaments. He played in the World Championships in 98-99, also played in the World Cup in 1996 and 2004 as well. So a lot of international play. He comes up at 6:35 tonight on Face Off, the hockey show. Hockey gets underway here tonight. High school hockey, the district tournament, underway. Matt Crandall will join us at 6:15 tonight to kind of break down that bracket. The one game again tonight, we'll touch on that one as well. Matt Markey is always at 5:35 tonight, but John Wagner at 5:15. Read with great interest today. Mike Hessman, of course, going in the International League Hall of Fame. All-time great slugger in that league, 433 home runs, all-time leader in organized minor league professional baseball. Also talk a little of Mud Hens, a little Tigers as well, and basically a little bit of everything with John because he covers just a little bit of everything. All right, everybody, this is Drive Time, driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik, coming to you from the Loft Restaurant here in Sylvania, Tam-O-Shanter. Back with John Wagner after this.
Talking local sports, it's Drive Time on Toledo's Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We've got more everybody. John Wagner standing by, Toledo Blade writer. Covers a lot of things, of course, Bowling Green basketball, the Mud Hens. Had a good story today on Mike Hesman going in the International League Baseball Hall of Fame. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. And before I forget, may I shamelessly plug another story?
Absolutely.
I just got off the phone about an hour ago with Mike Hesman. I'm going to post a story about his thoughts about being in the Hall of Fame. It'll be online, I'm hoping, in the next hour or so, and it'll be in tomorrow's paper.
Well, thank you very much. And walking away from the keyboards a little bit to spend a little time with us. Appreciate it. I don't want to blow your whole story here, and thanks for the heads up here, but you know, you look at the numbers, and I don't want to, paint a negative light. That's not the purpose for the question. I'm one of the good guys in the game for anything I've ever read or anybody like yourself that's ever talked to Mike. That's why he's still in the game. That's why he's still in the Tigers organization down at Double A Erie as a hitting coach. Was it the strikeouts? Was it the glove that, you know, a guy with power like that kept him out of the major leagues?
That's something for major league administrators to answer better than I. But, yeah, I think it's the strikeouts. The glove was never a problem. He was a top-notch defensive third baseman, just a terrific, great arm, surest glove. I mean, the glove was not a problem at all. It was the strikeouts. You know, that was the thing. And people, I mean, the other problem that he faced, if you remember, he came up originally with Atlanta and was considered a decent prospect at third base. But if you remember, the Braves at that time had another guy who was also pretty decent at third base as well.
Chipper.
And, yeah, Chipper Jones was his name. And that would be a tough replacement for anybody in the game, much less, you know, that's a Hall of Famer right there on the major league level. So he had that impediment in front of him. His first couple years in Toledo, he hit a lot of home runs, but also struck out a lot. In fact, the one year his batting average was in the 160s. So he deserves a lot of credit for, I hate to say reinventing his swing, but doing more damage with his swings. He did a lot of work with Larry Parrish and with hitting coach Bull Durham. And after going 2005, he was hitting 160, 170. 2 years later, he was the International League MVP, so he deserves a lot of credit for that work.
No, no doubt about it. And you know what? An ingredient in DNA like that, certainly you understand why he's coaching right now, because a lot of times it takes, you know, more than just ability. It's going through struggles and overcoming struggles, and knowledge like that certainly is an asset when you're looking at a career. Hey, any particular pitch, Jim, of course, Jim Cushlin, our producer, John, that you remember that Mike had any problems with?
No, I mean, it was just a matter of he had a big swing. He had a long swing. He's 6'5". There were a lot of moving parts. And, you know, the line that I always remember, and I still use this to this day, from Larry Parrish, when he'd have the big sluggers, the guys who hit the tape measure home runs, and Mike Hesman certainly qualified, LP's line about that is, when he hit a ball, it stayed hit, and I love that.
No doubt about it. And John Wagner joins us here, Toledo Blade writer, and was down at watching the Bowling Green Falcons. I mean, I got to tell you, what's going on down there? I started looking at some of their box scores. I think I went back three or four games anyways. Now, they're down like 16, 17, 18 points every night, and they battle back. I love that ingredient as well, but pretty tough to put yourself in that position every night. Good for them to have the will to battle back.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Last night they beat Western Michigan. They only trailed by 15, Mike. Only trailed by 15 because in their previous two home games they had trailed by 19. And in the first half, I mean, that ain't easy to do, to let the other team outscore you by 20 in the first 20 minutes of the game. Some of that is being a young team, that they have freshmen seeing a lot of minutes. They have two freshman starters, first couple of guys off the bench are freshmen, so they have a young team, and some of that is just kind of figuring things out. I don't know how else you explain it outside of freshmen are going to be freshmen. And I think the credit, though, goes A, to Coach Michael Huger, for he's focused on defense, and that is where they struggled. When they fall behind, it's because the defense isn't clicking, because they could score with just about anybody. And he's trying to get them to buy into defense. He's trying to affect players' minutes both positively and negatively by how they play defense. In other words, the more D you play, the more you play, and the less D you play, the less you play. And the guys are starting to figure that out now, that, you know, when you're making a run and trying to come back, it's great if you're scoring points, but if you allow the other team to score points, you don't make up any ground.
You know, I mean, I got to put the other hat here on a minute. You mentioned that 20-point lead, John Wagner, here on the Drive Time, driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik. I mean, I have to believe, anyways, I mean, what was Western Michigan doing in this game? I mean, for crying out loud, you get a 20-point lead, and all of a sudden you see this tidal wave coming at you. I mean, what was their response to this whole thing? Standing around and watching?
Well, you know, it's funny because Western's response was way better than the other two games when Eastern and Kent State led by 19 in the first half. I mean, by halftime, Kent State's lead was gone, was down to 7. So they found a way to lead by 19 and whittle 12 off of that before halftime. Now, Eastern, it took a little longer, but those two teams didn't take the punch. I mean, when BG counterpunched, they were down and then eventually were out. Western, even though they allowed BG to come back, they found a way to lead by 10 with a 6 or 7 minutes to play. So the difference was they kept running offense. It's just shots didn't fall. BG's defense was better. Their intensity was better. It was just a better response by Western, but obviously not good enough.
Again, Bowling Green Wednesday night. Before we leave Bowling Green, tell me about Mr. Lilliard down the stretch there. 3 out of 3 at the line. That's some pretty good pressure shooting.
Yeah, and if you read my story, you realize the first one was was a butt-ugly free throw. There's just no kind way about it. It basically hit the back flange like a pumpkin hitting a porch, and luckily it broke and fell into the basket. So also, though, I mean, there were a lot of other guys. I mean, Antoine Lillard made the key shots there at the end, but Justin Turner, a freshman, had 29 points on 11 of 13 shooting. I mean, he is a prime candidate for MAC Freshman of the Year. And DiMaggio Wiggins, who's from nearby Springfield High School, had another double-double. He's got 8 double-doubles in MAC play. So it is by committee for BG, and lately they've been getting it done.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to say what coaches don't say. I'm going to get ahead of myself and one game at a time stuff. Let's get off it for a second. Prospects of BG going into the MAC tournament first week in March. Can they make any noise?
Well, you know what? It's funny. If you look at the standings right now, they are tied for fourth with Western. With their win yesterday, they would be the fourth seed and be a bye into the quarterfinals directly in Cleveland. Now, as I told people yesterday, before you start hyperventilating about that, BG's got 2 games remaining with Buffalo, which is the class of the league. Sorry, Rocket fans, I gotta say it. I mean, the Rockets are doing great, but Buffalo's the best team in the league, and BG's gotta face them twice. So their road ahead is anything but simple, but they've put themselves in a good position to make some noise in the MAC tournament.
Again, talking to John Wagner. John, listen, I'm going to disclose some of your personal life here. I know you had a meeting at the Blade today with the folks in your department. Did you talk them into and twisted into their arm a little bit to send the entire Wagner roster down to Florida to cover a little baseball? Did that work?
I could not even get one Wagner down to Florida, so... But that is what it is. I've done some interviews with guys who are, I think, going to be in Toledo this year, and you'll see some of those in the paper in the coming days and weeks. And you know, we'll be monitoring what's going on in Lakeland, because if you read the story I wrote a couple days ago, you realize that this year more than ever, what happens in Detroit is really going to affect the Mud Hens roster. In other words, guys who you might pencil in for Toledo right now are going to be given every opportunity to earn a job in Detroit. And if they do, you know, they're not going to be in Toledo, or at least they won't start in Toledo, whereas some other people that might surprise you might end up in Toledo. And I'll give you an example there. The situation with the Tigers' starting rotation is such that they have seven, and if you want to include Alex Wilson, eight guys trying to get five starts or five spots in the rotation. A couple of those are set. I mean, if Jordan Zimmerman's healthy, he's going to be in the rotation. They didn't sign Mike Fiers to have him not start, so you would expect those guys will start. And if Michael Fulmer's healthy, obviously he's in the rotation. But one of the guys who's fighting for a spot is Daniel Norris, an extremely talented left-hander. The thing is, he has options remaining. In other words, the Tigers can send him to AAA and not risk losing him to another team, whereas Matthew Boyd, left-hander, he's out of options, I believe. So if they tried to send him to Toledo, they take the risk of losing him. So, you know, a guy like a Daniel Norris has really got to work to earn a spot, or we might see him start the year in Toledo.
I think Boyd would be snap, obviously, if he was sent down. He, like you said, he's out of options. I like where he's been inconsistent. You know, I really am looking forward to the baseball season, even the Tigers season. I just find this, you know, a little bit refreshing watching some of the young players. And, you know, if they can win 70 games and get on a roll every now and then. Look, I know from what I've read in the Detroit papers and online, opening day and other games are not moving quickly when it comes to the pace of tickets being sold. But from an interest standpoint and a Tiger fan, like I said, everybody knows this. I only root for three teams, and that's the Lions, the Tigers, and the Buckeyes. I'm going to find it interesting watching. I don't know if I'm going to stick around for more or two or three innings, but I'm certainly going to follow it anyways. Anything I missed here, John, you're working on, you can pass on, and we'll be looking for the Hespin story here in a couple hours. We'll let you get back to work. Anything else?
Yeah, no, I think the Tigers saga is the one that is going to be interesting. I find it interesting, too, but it sounds like you're like me. I want to see what the future holds. I'm not worried about, because nobody expects them to compete for a pennant this year. So, you know, will they still have my interest in July or August? Yeah, because I want to see prospects. Other people who want to just see a champion, well, they might be on to other things at that time.
Well, and the other thing I'm going to keep in a close eye, I'm wondering what they're going to do if Victor Martinez does not get off to a good start. Obviously, his health's a big concern as well. All right, Daddy Wags, thanks a lot for coming on. We will be reading. Great hearing your voice, sir.
Good talking to you, Mike, and tell Jim Cushling you need to give him a pay raise. If I ran him through the ringer to get on the air, and he delivered. So,
well, listen,
the next time you have pay raises, he deserves one, okay?
He's well compensated. We figure only two more years in radio, he's going to be able to retire. And if you believe that, we got some land for you out by a Bono to sell you. So, anyways, good stuff, Johnny. Great hearing your voice. Thanks a lot.
Take good care, Mike.
John Wagner, Toledo Blade. Bowling Green, it's been a fun beat this year. I mean, another game, another comeback was the headlines, and right down the stretch, down by 15. Box scores today, they've been down by 19, down the Rockets win last night. Which reminds me, by the way, I have two tickets to give away. University of Toledo Rockets women's team coming up Saturday at 2 o'clock against Western Michigan University. That's over at Savage Hall. The tickets are at Rockets Bookstore, along with a great-looking brand-new hat. Two tickets for the game Saturday, 2 o'clock, Rockets Women over at Rockets Bookstore. Now, that's 3407 West Bancroft on campus. It is east of Secor and on the south side of the street. Hours open tonight till 6 o'clock, so the tickets are not going to be there. Normally 9 to 6, 9 to 5 on Friday, 10 to 5 on Saturday. So Jim's going to take the, let's do it this way. Jim's going to take the sixth caller, number of MAC wins for the women's team at the University of Toledo. Two free tickets, free hat, Rockets Bookstore, sixth caller, call in. They are yours. Give Jim your name. I tonight then will email Rockets Bookstore, go to the counter, and your tickets will be there for Saturday's game. TAS Electronics update right around the corner. This is Drive Time, driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahoney.
Cure for annoying traffic jams. It's the Drive Time Show on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Drive Time. Drive Time. Glad to have you on board. As always, driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik. We've had five calls for the tickets. Next caller gets the two tickets, free tickets, Saturday when the University of Toledo Rockets women at Savage take on Western Michigan. Free hat as well. Got to pick them up, of course, over at Rockets Bookstore. That's on campus. They're open at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Games at 2, so pick the tickets up, I don't know, around noon. Maybe go next door to Furdo's, have a little lunch. Tickets are free, plus a free hat. Had five callers. Next caller gets them. Jim will be picking up the phone. The number is 866-240-1065. Rockets Women's Basketball. Again, call the number, and Jim will hook you up. Matt Markey standing by, of course, our Wednesday get-together. He is the Toledo Blade outdoor editor, and as always, his appearance brought to you by Jan's Netcraft Fishing Tackle. It's their passion, no doubt about that. Advice is always free. Briarfield Boulevard, Maumee, everything you need to catch the big ones, bass, walleye, anything else that swims. Visit jansnetcraft.com. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Mike, I'm doing fine this evening. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I was looking at the numbers in your story from Friday, and the archery hunters playing a larger and vital part in the harvest as the headlines read, and you look at the numbers, indeed that's the case.
It is, and that's a trend that we've seen for a number of years, and it seems to be just, you know, continuing to grow and intensify, that more people are interested in, you know, learning archery and, you know, utilizing that skill in the field, deer hunting, and also taking advantage of, you know, the much longer season you have in Ohio, especially as an archery hunter. You've got essentially, 4 months to hunt, and it's a lot longer than our firearm season. So it's, it's nice to see, you know, so many people who are taking the time to learn it, because it's not something you pick up in a few hours. There's a lot of practice involved and all, but, you know, there's also, I think, a great deal of satisfaction if you can complete the hunt and the stalk, you know, using just a bow. Now, some of these bows are obviously a lot more sophisticated than what were used hundreds of years ago, but the bow and arrow is a weapon that goes back to really to primitive times. So there's a bit of a, you know, nostalgic aspect to it, and I think some of the attention that was placed on archery with the Hunger Games movies, that played a role in it. I see a lot more women taking up hunting and wanting to learn archery as their entry into hunting. They're not picking up a firearm first and then moving to archery. They want to start with archery. So all those things that, you know, I think are positive, and it certainly does reflect in the numbers.
Again, Matt Markey joins us here on Drive Time, driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik. Face Off the Hockey Show comes up at 6 o'clock tonight. The numbers, too, I think you make a great point. I mean, listen, there's a lot of things that have to be factored in here. Weather, of course, being one, and, all sorts of different events. The youth weekend, food source availability for the deer, herds, so on and so forth. So the numbers, I mean, after reading that, I'm still, you know, kind of amazed here that the numbers really, if you look at 2016, 2017 compared to 17-18, still pretty close regardless of all the things that can factor into it. This year, almost 190,000 deer taken.
Yeah, what happens is we'll have fluctuations where we get an especially nasty run of weather, say during the firearm season, or there'll be a couple week period where it's just bitter cold or deep snow and it's just difficult for people to get out. So there'll be a big dip in the harvest in those certain periods. But over time, and especially when we look at, you know, 3, 4, 5 years of statistics, those things tend to all even out. You don't have those dramatic peaks and you don't have those significant valleys and all. The numbers tend to even out because the weather's a variable that we can't predict and we just have to deal with. And sometimes it, you know, kind of has a big impact on the short term, but over the long haul, one season, two, three, something like that, it all kind of evens out.
Tell me a little bit. I saw your notes here in the deer calls, and tell me a little bit about that. So it looks like they were close to what they were, you know, intending to get anyways. And you know what side I'm on here. And the other thing, of all the venison that was basically donated to the food banks and the shelters around, so that's a pretty successful endeavor as well.
It is, and it's something that, the Metro Parks has certainly looked at, you know, the situation, you know, what's going on, what's the problem, how serious is it, and then what can we do in terms of trying to address this problem, minimize the long-term damage, you know, take an active approach in managing this herd. And it was, you know, they have the sharpshooters here for just a short period of time. You know, they're kind of on the clock, and it's not an inexpensive endeavor, but it's also super productive. And what they found is that certain places where you might see, you know, a large number of deer this day and the next day and the following day, and then there might be 3 or 4 or 5 days where you don't see them at all. That's the nature of deer. They move around. They're, you know, they're browsers. They won't sit in one spot and feed, you know, continuously. They browse as they move along. They get comfortable in a certain general area for a little while, and then say something, you know, spooks them or scares them, and then they move on and they're somewhere else. So the best plan was to go into certain parks, you know, certain nights and try to take X number of deer, but the deer, you know, might not be there. And that was the case, you know, at the middle ground, certainly, because they, set up there one night and were ready to remove, you know, a certain number of deer because there's been quite a few in there and done, you know, a lot of damage to vegetation and all. And they just took one deer out of the middle grounds that particular evening. And after a little while, they decided, look, our efforts might be, you know, more productive or time better spent somewhere else. So they moved to a different park. And, I've been down in there and along the middle grounds. Those deer will use the railroad corridor and also the riverbank corridor and move through there and, you know, find certain areas. They really like that area below Rossford there where that real deep basin is and all those railroad tracks. It's full of deer. And that's the same group, I think, that comes into the middle ground. So on that particular night, they weren't there, but, you know, they did, manage to call, you know, 240 deer from the 6 properties and, more than 11,000 pounds of venison went to the food pantry. So that's a successful, you know, project for this year. And hopefully, as the years go by, we'll have less and less of this as we get the herd to a much more manageable position.
Matt, is it your goal that once a week you want to put a lump in my throat? I think that's what you're trying to do to me. Haley Simmons, I read your Sunday story, of course, who passed away in South America there with a blood clot. This hits close to home because I'm looking at a jersey here at the Loft Restaurant of Sylvania Tamashanner, a former manager here with Olympic hockey going on, a guy that played for Herb Brooks at the University of Minnesota, Mike Greeter, that made his home here in Toledo and was a close friend of mine and a lot of people. And I was honored to eulogize him at his service and was a great friend with Mike, as tough as nails could be, and we lost Mike way too early here. I was teaching some kids how to play hockey here and had a blood clot, and I think it was in his lung and eventually made it to his heart. We lost Mike, and literally 12 feet from me, his jersey hangs where I'm broadcasting from tonight. Same thing with Haley Simmons, the Whitmer grad, an Ohio State grad that loved to travel, loved adventure, and read your story on her on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a sad story. But it's also a very, you know, real life people story. There are people that lose their children. There are, you know, tragic things that happen. That's not really anybody's fault, but it's part of our life experience on this planet. And, I got to know Haley when she came back from her travels to the Far East. And here's this just exuberant, you know, energetic, charismatic young woman who's so excited about all these places she's seen. And she wanted to see the world, and so she set up her work schedule so she would work her brains out during the summer at Put-in Bay or someplace and save her money and then be able to travel, you know, in the winter. And, you know, before she settled down and got a full-time career, had a family and so on, her plan was to see the world. And unfortunately, on what she expected to be, you know, her final trip in that adventure sequence, you know, she lost her life from the complications of, you know, a number of different factors there. And, I know her mother fairly well. And, I gotta tell you, it's a story that needs to be told because she's a young woman that, you know, a lot of people in this community knew. You know, she's got the Ohio State pedigree and the Whitmer pedigree. People know a lot of them. People know her from there. And, you know, we reported at the time that she had passed away, but there were very few details, and it took a long time for the details to come together. And I spoke to her mother and said, you know, I'd like to tell her story if you're comfortable with it, and she was comfortable with it. But certainly an anguishing time for me as a reporter and a writer, because like you, Mike, you know, I have daughters, and we could be in the other side of, you know, the conversation there. And so you count your blessings. Your heart goes out to people, you know, like Sherry, that have lost a child, a daughter, you know, so young and so full of life. And but it's part of the human story. And my plan is to do one of those a month for the next year, and on people from our area who, you know, were out enjoying the outdoors, adventure, travel, or whatever, and lost their life, or people who had a lifelong dream to do this or that in the outdoors and then never got to that point. And I found quite a few compelling stories, and they're not meant to be, you know, tear jerkers, but they might end up being that. But they're really just the basic people story that, you know, fascinates me and interests me, but also, you know, a piece of me kind of dies, you know, when I have to tell that story, because that could very easily be me. So
no question about it. I mean, for crying out loud, I mean, you're the same way. All parents, all right, worry about my kids. One lives in West Toledo. The other one lives up in Temperance, and they're getting phone calls. Everything all right, let alone someplace, you know, halfway around the world, which her mother said in the story. I was worried about other things, you know, bad characters, you know, when she's traveling, but again, it was a health situation with the blood clot. Hey, Bernie Place, I know Bernie, by the way, and involved again on this bird count coming up, a little science and some numbers and some charting.
Yeah, and it's a great thing to break up the winter for a lot of our, you know, bird watchers and people that are interested in birds that just have, you know, that cabin fever that hits us all. This is a great way to feel like, well, spring, you know, can't be far off. If we're paying attention to the birds and we're taking an inventory, a census or whatever, it can't be far off. And Bernie's, you know, passionate about his work, enthusiastic about what he does, and has a real, you know, love and concern for our feathered friends. And so he's the perfect guy to kind of be in charge of this locally. But it's a worldwide effort, and it's the one of those ways that biologists employ the citizen infantry and ask them to do to be the eyes out there in the field and to help take inventory. And it also is a great tool for biologists to notice trends, whether certain birds are no longer in an area where they were, whether there's habitat issues or population threats and so on. This is kind of the best way to do it, because birds are real tricky. You know, they're kind of like fish. They're hard to count because they don't hold still. And, you know, it really helps to have as many people involved as possible. So I'm hoping Bernie gets a lot of volunteers here locally in Toledo area, southeast Michigan. I hope we really do our part in this worldwide endeavor to try to take an accurate assessment of our bird populations.
Good stuff, Matt. What you're working on? We'll talk next week. What can we look forward to?
Well, I've got a piece coming up on Sunday on a couple from Toledo who were fishing this winter down off Costa Rica, and the boat was well out in the Pacific and encountered a sea turtle that was in distress. It had been entangled in a fishing net, so they brought the lines in and stopped the fishing and went about rescuing this turtle and you know, getting the net free, and then, you know, their joy and excitement when they saw it swim free. So that'll be that'll be on Sunday. It's a fun story, you know, good deed by those folks.
All right, good stuff, Matt. Great hearing your voice. Thanks for coming on. We'll do it again Wednesday.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Matt Markey, Toledo Blade, outdoor editor. This is Drive Time driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik. Back to close it out after this. We're professionals paying attention to the clock. Drive Time winding down.